There are so many reasons why I got into teaching.
One of the best things is the light bulb moment.
When you see a pupil suddenly understand something, that's really, really special.
Every child is so full of potential, and the thing that makes me proudest to be a teacher is seeing them realise what they are capable of.
I don't think any other job can give you the same satisfaction.
That's why I chose to teach.
You could get £26,000 tax-free to train. Search, apply to teach. Selected subjects only, subject to eligibility.
Gamertag Radio is on Play.it.
You can now watch Gamertag Radio live on Twitch.
Get all the latest news and coverage related to the gaming industry.
Join hosts Danny Pena, Paris Lilly, and Peter Toledo.
Don't miss the crew record the podcast live Sundays, 9:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, or Wednesdays, 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Get involved with the conversation, send us questions, and be part of the show.
Gamertag Radio.
Follow us, twitch.tv/GamertagRadio.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Worldwide.
Podcasting since 2005.
Take it out.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
Back on the scene.
With your host, yeah. Podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
Here we go.
And we are live, Gamertag Radio, episode 691. This is Peter, a.k.a. Pete Rock, in the house. Typically, Danny's the one doing the introductions, but I'm going to take this over just because it's a lot of fun. We've got a special guest today before we introduce him. Talk to me.
I'm pretty hype about this interview, man. Very hype about this interview. Because we've been playing Agent of Mayhem now for a couple of days, Pete.
Yep.
And I remember you were the one that actually got to see this game during at E3, right?
Yep, that's correct. Yeah, I had an opportunity to check them out at the Volition booth. Man, it was a lot of fun. And speaking of Agents of Mayhem and fun, we have the lead writer and narrative director for Agents of Mayhem, Jason L. Blair. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
All right.
Yeah, man. Yeah, congrats on the launch, man.
Yep.
The game just came out. The game has been getting a lot of feedback, great feedback. Mixed, but I see more positive than negative. So that's how it is, you know, when every time a game comes out.
You know, it's divisive, but that's okay. Like, because there is a lot of positivity, and it's humor. And humor by its very nature is divisive, but man, it's hitting with a lot of people and they're having a lot of fun, and that makes me happy.
Cool, man. Cool. So let's talk about this, man. When you started work on this game with the team?
I rolled on to Agents of Mayhem right after finishing Saints Row 4. So I was on AOM for about 4 years before it shipped. Yeah. Wow. I was there when it was just a wee little baby. And helped foster it into what it is today. And you know, new IP, you know, there are things that Volition's known for. Saints Row is part of our identity. We have a special sauce. It's, you know, over the top open world games, right? And part of our open sauce, there's a phrase that our players are agents of mayhem with lots of toys. And that's what ended up informing this, was like a new take on that. And there's a lot to figure out in those 4 years to get done. Yeah.
So one question before we start getting into the, because you were talking about humor and stuff like that. How important is humor to a franchise like Agents of Mayhem / Saints Row in general?
Oh, it's interesting because there's a turning point in Saints Row's history where it started to add a lot more humor. You know, we're transitioning from Saints Row 2 to Saints Row 3, and like humor is always in the Saints Row series, but it kind of got moved to the forefront with Saints Row 3. And I was a fan of the series before coming to Volition and working on Saints Row 4, where obviously it was like the big send off, the big celebration of Saints Row, and we really cranked up the humor. And so there's kind of an evolution. You can look at every entry in the Saints Row franchise, and we add on humor and kind of bigger, more ludicrous situations with each one. But humor is a niche that Volition is comfortable with, and is that we like being in. And we felt it was really important for multiple reasons. One, because it's the studio doing it and what one of our strengths are, but also because of the inspirations that informed Agents of Mayhem. When you look at the 80s cartoons and 80s action shows that we're pulling a lot of this stuff from, there was a heavy dose of humor in all of that. And so it was really important to bring that over in Agents of Mayhem. But, you know, modernize it, give a little, you know, and for mature edge. Add our own spin, but be respectful of what we're poaching from.
Yeah, that's the thing. I just love the characters, man. So far, right now, I noticed, you know, some of the characters you start off with is Hollywood, Fortune, and Tech, right? Hard Tech? The thing is, to me, I personally love Fortune. Like, to me, she's a little bit fast. I love her, the way how she jumps and everything too. But how was it like to come up with the concept of like the different characters in the game? Because all of them have like special abilities and all that stuff. So
yeah, well, they all started with like before they were even designs, right? Like they were basic concepts. We knew that Mayhem was a global organization, so it was really important to represent a lot of the globe. And of course, you know, the first time we were concepting characters, we had, you know, like 60 of them. You know, we just had a board full of them all over the globe. And probably, I don't know, I probably came up with, over the course of time we were dedicated to kind of coming up with characters, we probably hit about 100 concepts. But again, they were just like brief bios, maybe some you know, rough concept art or kind of like a found photo to be like, we want something like this. And then as we started to refine them, the concepts that were strongest but also gave us a wide array of diversity, because that was really, really important for us that we're representing different viewpoints, ethnicities, backgrounds, religious viewpoints, sexualities. It was really important to us that the Agents of Mayhem were a true spectrum of characters, and not just like the same character in different outfits with a different gun. And so once those started to get laid out, then worked with the combat team, the agent team specifically, and started to marry what they wanted to do from gameplay wise with the characters that we had. And it's not like we just, you know, had characters and pushed them out and said, give them weapons. It was a little much more organic in practice and a lot more back and forth. But you know, there are certain things, like we have the big former Navy guy, right? Hard Tack. We knew we wanted him to be the B.A. Baracus, the big friendly dude everyone kind of loves, right? He's big, he's loud, he doesn't care. He's a shotgun guy, right? The weapon matches his personality. And so, yeah. And then it was once the agent team started to put together how they were going to act, what their weapons were going to be, animation came in, you know, to talk about like how they wanted the characters to move. And of course that would inform the work we had already done. And we started to make sure make sure it was aligning. And it was a blast, absolute blast. Characters are one of the best, funnest things to come up with, and having the freedom and almost, you know, having kind of the mandate to create as diverse a cast as possible, so that every character was a separate dream, right? A separate aspiration for the player. So it wasn't just like, I need a shotgun, I need pistols, and I need a rifle, but like, I want this character, this type of character, that type of character, that type of character.
Okay, so before we go further into the machinations and history of the game, let's rewind, and for those that are watching or listening for the first time and have zero idea of what to expect with Agents of Mayhem, can we get the brief synopsis of what is Agents of Mayhem for the uninitiated?
Agents of Mayhem is the latest game from Volition. You probably know us from the Saints Row franchise. It is a third-person, single-player, open-world action game where you play members of an organization called Mayhem. It's a ragtag group of kind of sort of heroes who are saving the world from villainous masterminds known as Legion. And the game takes place in Seoul, South Korea. You will face a whole array of evil lieutenants in Legion's Ministry of Pride, led by a man named Dr. Babylon. In the game, you field three agents from a group of 12 to take them out in the city. You control one at a time. You can easily, quickly switch between them. And it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of humor, a lot of action, big explosions. It's a good time.
Yeah, one of the things that I do like about this game is that you guys have like this style. Reminds me a lot of like the old cartoons. And I just love the animations every time you pass like certain parts of the main missions and stuff. So first of all, who was part of the animation? And was there any cartoons from back in the days that inspired you guys to come up with this, like, you know, the goofy, funny type game and stuff?
I think we drew a lot from G.I. Joe, Mask, Transformers, Ghostbusters, a lot of the classic cartoons from the 80s. That a lot of us on the team had grown up on. The decision to put 2D in the game was really kind of putting a stake in the ground for Agents of Mayhem, because we had to own that inspiration. Outsourced, we used a place called Powerhouse, who just did absolutely fantastic work on the 2D cutscenes. And it takes a long time to make these cartoons. So once that was nailed down, like, you know, we're putting our chips in on this kind of making a cartoon for this game. And I think there's like an over an hour of cartoon footage in the game. And so it forced us to stick with a lot of decisions we made early on. But, you know, what it allowed us to do, and something that's harder to do in 3D, where you have to build actual 3D assets. And, you know, once you have the assets in 3D, it can be easier to move cameras and stuff like that. But with 2D, it allowed us to go back in time and go around the world, because it was there was some concepting that had to be done to visualize what the ruins of Persepolis look like in Agents of Mayhem. But we had a lot of freedom to just travel the world and invent characters to bring in to tell the backstories of these agents, and then to tell the story of, you know, Dr. Babylon's attempt to dominate the world.
What was the deciding factor to put the setting of the game in Seoul, South Korea? Where did that come from?
We looked at a lot of cities, and we knew we wanted to be kind of that 20 minutes into the future. We looked at a lot of cities, and when we decided that we were going to focus on the Ministry of Pride, and we had defined them as the technological arm of Legion, every ministry, there are seven deadly sins, is focused on something else. And Pride is focused on technology. And so we wanted, you know, kind of like, what do people think of when they think of cities and technology? And almost always, it's an Asian city. A lot of people think of Tokyo. People think of China. You know, it's like, right. Well, what about Seoul, South Korea? It's a city that everyone knows, right? It's like, no one's going to be shocked to be like, Seoul, never heard of it. Once we started to do research into Seoul and be like, man, this city is gorgeous. And there are a lot of places we could ramp up to kind of, you know, highlight the technological angle of this background of the setting. Like we have a fictional expo going on in Seoul, South Korea called the Tomorrow Tech Expo. Mm-hmm. So that allowed us to be like, you know, we approach it like a world's fair. So let's put in like a big expansive exhibit, big buildings in here. But let's keep the traditional aspects of Seoul that speak to its heritage, speak to its roots, speaks to its past. And you get really great contrast there, where you could be standing on an old temple with a you know, water running through it. But you have these digital docents informing you of the history of this temple. You're looking at some like real sci-fi looking high-tech buildings and stuff like that.
Yeah, being of Korean heritage, I actually, when that scene popped up at the beginning, it's like, you know, Seoul, South Korea. I was just like, thank you. You know, someone represented us. Someone finally brought us into the game. But, you know, all jokes aside, I love that one component, especially because, you know, being Asian, being Korean, that actually, you know, I was like, Ma, we made it. Finally, we made it. It's that, plus, as you mentioned earlier, having, you know, the diversity of the cast. How critical was that for volition to make sure that diversity was grasped properly?
Oh, it was hugely important. We knew it was a goal that we wanted to have diversity, but we didn't want to have tokenism. We didn't want it to just be hey, look at this person. This person's African. Hey, look at this person. This person's gay. We wanted to do our best to represent honestly, authentically, this cast of characters. And when I would talk to people from all different disciplines, and let me tell you, diversity is not a hard sell at Volition. Volition gets it. As a studio, understand, like, we need to do better and do more with our games. And of course, cast of characters allows us to do a lot more and try a lot of different things. But also that, like, we've got to look to experts to help us on this. And we've got to admit, like, look, we don't know this stuff. Can someone help us? The writing, the animation, a lot of that was also hugely informative. But I oversaw the writing. And for me, it was setting a lot of guidelines for the tone of how we treat our characters. One being is that we always respect the character. The character could be an idiot. We still respect them. And we respect who they are. And also, their identity is never the butt of a joke. We're a comedy game where we have diversity. The someone's sexuality, someone's gender, someone's ethnicity, someone's religious affiliation, none of that stuff is ever the joke. It's just a fact about them. Like, maybe it informed their viewpoint on something, and that viewpoint leads to a joke, but, like, it never goes to, like, haha, this person is this. Like, no, never. That's disrespecting the character, even if they're the bad guy. Even if they're the person you're supposed to want to take out. Like, no, we don't do that. And then it was really iteration and getting feedback and talking to friends, talking to people we knew. We have, people inside the studio having honest conversations with them. Volition has an inclusivity panel where we could go to them with questions we had with any aspect of the game. And they would kind of do the research, reach out, have the conversations to kind of get us to get us information we needed. And also, people could go to the inclusivity panel with concerns they had about anything we were doing, right? So if they're not directly creating content, like writing or audio or animations, whatever, they could come. And I would say, like, ideally they would just come talk to me, but not everyone's going to be comfortable talking to me for whatever reason. Like, I'm a big guy. I'm 6.5 feet tall. For some people, I might be imposing or something, right? And that's fine as long as they have someone to talk to and that person can talk to me.
Right.
Or, if it concerns writing or whatever. So hugely important. And my hope was that we did enough right, knowing going in that, we're going to mess some things up. We're not going to do this right. That's the challenge of anyone who's not them, but ultimately as a writer, you have to be able to write people who aren't you, because no one wants to read the Jason L. Blair story starring 35 Jason L. Blairs. I do, but yeah, I mean, never mind. They do. The world's demanding it. As a writer, you have to be able to write different viewpoints. But also you have to be like, yo, we're going to put it out. We're going to do our honest best and get the feedback. And man, I am stoked that so many people have latched on, have seen themselves in these characters. A friend of mine forwarded me a Tumblr post today where someone was celebrating that there was a bad butch lesbian in a video game. Because they just had fallen in love with Braddock. And that was hugely, Braddock is in a relationship with this character, Friday. Friday's one of my favorite characters. So getting that feedback and people saying, like, I'm seeing myself in this game. This is incredible. Like, that makes me really, really happy.
That's really awesome, though. Yeah. Really cool. But see, one thing, too, that I noticed, every time you lock an achievement in the game, there's because I have the Xbox One version. So every time you unlock an achievement, there's different images, and one of them, I don't want to spoil it, but it reminded me of a Disney movie. I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. So you have a lot of the achievement that you guys have images of like stuff that maybe is based from a cartoon, from a movie or something, right? So how that came about too, because it's also based on the movies that probably inspired you guys to come up with a concept with this too, right? Yeah.
Those are pretty late, at least when I became aware of them. And people were like, oh yeah, you know, the Xbox One screens for achievements. And I was like, oh yeah, those thing, you know, because there's always, every platform has its own like thing, own rules, right? Like,
yeah.
So as someone who doesn't really work with compliance or anything, it's like, oh yeah, I forget. Yeah, we have to do these things. And I will say I was not involved at all in making these, but man, seeing them when they started to get shared internally, oh, they made me so happy. They made me so, so happy. And, yeah. You know, yeah, a ton of them are, some of them are just like group shots, right, of the agents in their kind of signature outfits. And then some of them are kind of not exactly memes, but like there's that cool Girls Don't Look at Explosions one that I love. But yeah, a lot of them are putting the Mayhem and Legion characters into classic poster images. And oh man, that was a huge boost, especially near the end of a project when people are, you know, they've worked on this project a while, man, let's just get this baby to bed. And it's a nice to have that kind of boost of like, is that what I think that is? Is that okay, that's amazing, thank you.
Yeah, I do love that, because you want to know more about the story, so you get really into when you see these achievements and stuff. So that was pretty cool, and not a lot of companies are doing that. You know, they just put a, you know, regular image, but I feel like you guys got really creative, got some stuff that involved with the main campaign, and I love it. I just love the whole concept. That was really cool.
One of the things I love about Volition, I've been with it for 5 years, is just it is such a safe place for dumb ideas. And I love it. Like, that's working in Agents of Mayhem, I would talk about that a lot. Like, I want that kind of inspired stupidity, because to me, dumb and stupid, these are not bad words. I love it. Like, when I see things that are just like, what? Like, if I see, like, you know, I watch some like Adventure Time and stuff like that, I'm like, some of these ideas are so incredibly dumb, they're brilliant. And that's kind of what I aspire to, coming up with stuff. And yeah, like, look, we could have had one image, that would have been easy. Just to have like the Agents of Mayhem logo behind everyone. But like, someone at Volition was like, let's do this instead. And enough people were like, yeah, you're right, let's do this instead. That it got put forward. And it's really like how games like Saints Row 3 and 4, especially, and Agents of Mayhem get made. It's just, you get enough people who understand like this crazy idea is worth doing because no one else is doing it, or because of just how fun and cool it is. You know, I love those images.
So I have a quick question, and it goes along the lines of the, you know, the silly and dumb factor. Saints Row and now Agents of Mayhem, essentially Volition as a whole, outlandish is the norm. How do you top the previous one? Because you're always going and then saying, you know what, there's that line, take 3 steps over it. How do you do that for every game? And like, is there a line that can be crossed, or is it just like, you know, free for all?
There are some lines that just can't be crossed. And then kind of that's the magic trick of making a game like Agents of Mayhem or Saints Row 4, is you make it seem like anything goes, but really there are rules behind the scenes. And like I talked about, like, as far as like, you know, jokes not being at the expense of our characters is a rule we have. I don't think it's ever really apparent, you know, that line exists, and that, like, okay, good. It's not, it's that's kind of, you know, you talk about like, where do you go from here? And like, that's a really good question, because there's only so far out you can go before you've just kind of lost everyone, you know, where you're so ludicrous that people have no way to connect to what you're doing or to what you're making. And really what the way I view it is less about where do we go, like how do we get farther out from what we've done before, and more like, what's a different avenue we can go down that can also reach those similar lengths, right? Like pop culture is a big thing of like celebrity and pop culture is a big thing in Saints Row the Third. And Saints Row the Fourth, or Saints Row 4, was a celebration of the Saints Row franchise. It was a celebration of our shared pop culture experiences. Like, there that, like, Saints Row 4 is just filled with filled with references to music, movies, games, everything. And Agents of Mayhem is like, well, we're going to have a very focused inspiration pool, and we're really going to go down this kind of Saturday morning redux is what we called it internally. Like, that's the avenue we're going to stay in. And that's kind of the trick for... It's less about how do we do bigger, crazier, and more like how do we do big and crazy in a different way.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it. You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
A lot of the listeners that have been checking out us playing the game and stuff, they will ask, like, oh, so wait, this is Saints Row? Because they see the colors of the game. Some of the characters, how they run, probably reminds them of Saints Row and everything. So why you guys wanted to focus on a new IP then instead of just going back to Saints Row for your you and your team?
That's a really good question. It was, we hear a lot of people, you know, from people who they want Saints Row 2 again, or they want Saints Row 3 again, or they want Saints Row 5. And it's like, that's great. Me too. But you've got to do different things. You have to, for your sake, for the sake, but, so you want to do something new and different, but you also, you know, this was an opportunity given kind of Volition's penchant for doing things outside the norm of we can bring people over by having familiar elements, right? We have Oleg in the game. We have Pierce in the game and, you know, Johnny Gat in the game. And these are, you know, iconic characters from the Saints Row franchise. And, you know, bringing them over allowed us to hopefully bring people over who, you know, be like, oh, you know, I'd like to see Pierce again. I'd like to hang out with him again. I like Johnny Gat. I'd like to see him again. But allow us to do different things with it. I think really the overall goal was just challenging ourselves, and also new console generation on the back end. You know, we have new engine, new tool set. Let's do different. Let's, you know, it's not like Volition has only ever done Saints Row. You know, we did Summoner, Punisher, Red Faction, and then Saints Row. And then even inside of like Red Faction Guerrilla versus Red Faction Armageddon, they're very different games. So it's one of those things where I'm, as a fan, I want the things that the people always talk about. But as a developer and as someone with deep love for Volition and for the games we do, knowing like there's a lot of value in doing something different. And even if I don't know the future, like even if this is the only Agents of Mayhem game ever made, I'm glad we did it. And whatever we do beyond it, you know, it allowed us to do this thing and have this idea and then approach a new project completely fresh.
And so speaking of being different, one thing that has always been synonymous, and I guess this goes back to not trying to do the same thing with as the other Saints Row universe games, I've always loved the co-op experience with my friends. I really dug it the last on four, running around with the purple bats. I'm not going to go as to which purple bats, but I think purple bats, you know exactly which ones we're talking about. The silliness of being in game and just out of nowhere getting smacked with a purple bat and you're flying across across the city. I'm not going to lie, I was disappointed when I found out it was a single player only experience. Can you tell us what was the deciding factors to maintain it as a single person or single player experience and not be able to bring in a co-op?
Well, I mean, there were a lot of technical conversations that happened early on that I was not at all a part of, mm-hmm. you know, co-op's not easy. Multiplayer is not easy. And I knew early on, and I think everyone knew early on, that any decision co-op and multiplayer in Agents of Mayhem would have to be justified. You know, there'd have to be an extremely compelling reason to do it because of the amount of work. And it's a lot of work from very specialized programmers, right? Who you'd be taking them off of other things to focus on this. Mm. And I think it was, it ended up just being a logistics thing of, you know, what best serves Agents of Mayhem? And when we talked about this idea of you running a multinational agency, hunting evil masterminds, you know, like the argument, as the arguments on either side were formulating, the stronger argument was, this is you building your agency. And the argument for the development cost, at least as far as I know, I mean, you know, honestly, I'm the writer. I just don't have insight into a lot of the engine level stuff that gets talked about.
Right.
But from my outside perspective, as someone who mostly heard the decisions and helped have some higher level conversations, it really just was overall the studio felt the strongest experience was as a single player game.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
Well, one of the things I cannot wait for is to play Destiny on PC. One of the reasons is because I've got a bunch of WD, you know, solid state drives in my gaming computer. And yeah, I'm so looking forward to playing it. So with Western Digital, you're now able to get solid state drives and hard drives to fit your unique needs. So when you add the superior performance of a WD solid state drive to your PC, you get blazing read speeds so you can boot your system quickly or load games and other applications in a snap. This is actually, I mean, I've done reboots of my computer and it takes under 20 seconds. Yes, I timed it. I'm nerdy like that. Like combined with a reliable Western Digital hard drive, you get up to 6 terabytes of storage to keep your games library, direct feed video, podcasts, and more all in a single place. For a limited time, Gamertag Radio listeners get 20% off Western Digital solid state drives with the coupon code WDGTR. Now, take into consideration that these are only for solid state drives. I believe it's 256 and 512 gig sizes. And this code is only available in the United States. So once again, Gamertag Radio listeners get 20% off Western Digital solid state drives with the coupon code WDGTR. Find out more. All you got to do is go to WD.com/GTR and get your gaming and storage up to the next level.
Back on the scene.
This is Gamertag Radio. Voicemail at 786-2737-GTR.
Don't get me wrong. I love Agents of Mayhem. I think it's hilariously stupid fun. I like, it's almost like a trade-off. It's like, okay, fine, I can't have the co-op, but essentially I kind of do because I can just scroll my mouse and I've got two other characters to play with. They're just under my control and I don't have the option of having my friend play with me or select theirs. So while it's not the ideal thing for me, you know, I still see the value in the game, especially because I get to choose from three different characters and bring three different viewpoints or strengths or weaknesses, as whichever way you want to see it, into the game. So don't get me wrong. I still love the game. It's a great game. It's just one of the little things that just doesn't appease me. And I understand Volition doesn't write games for Peter. They write them for the world.
So it's a fair question. Like, they should be asking that question. As there are things we're known for. We're known for customization and we're known for co-op. And Agents of Mayhem, the customization comes through you customizing your squad with different characters and then customizing the skins of these characters. These are questions on everyone's mind when they talk about a Volition project. And I get it. And I guarantee if there was a button that we could press that would just make co-op and customization happen, everyone would have been pressing that button. Mm-hmm. There are just, you know, they're very logical nuts and bolts reasons for a lot of this stuff. And it's never a matter of like, oh, we don't want people to have this or we don't want this in the game itself. It's a matter of, we only have so many developers. We only have so much time. We've got to make the smart choices about where we put these, where we put people and what where we spend our budget, right? Both monetarily.
Well, this is going to be a very random question here, but why the color purple? I just been running right now. Like, why Volition just loves to pick the color purple? I don't know. Is there some? There's a meaning, or what?
Well, there is.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Saints Row, the very first Saints Row, mm-hmm. for a long time, the Third Street Saints had a different color. And there may have been a game that came out that beat us to market There was also an open world game about gangbangers, and they may have used that color for their gangs. So, and again, I wasn't here for that. That was many years before I started, but I've heard the stories of this, and really was like, well, purple is the color of royalty. And that was kind of it. Like, yeah, the purple is, it's a color that we own. You know, no one else is really owning purple at the time. I'm looking at you, Twitch. and so, yeah, they move forward on it. And, yeah, purple has just become part of our identity, you know, after releasing four games. And you can see the box art of Saints Row, the Saints Row games, and purple keeps becoming more and more of the box is purple. Yeah. But I was actually surprised. Like we actually don't the characters themselves don't tend to wear a lot of purple by default. Some of our skins bring the purple out, but there's still a lot of purple in the game. A lot of purple in the game.
That's fine. Now I know every time I see a color of purple, I'm like, all right, it's them. There you go, Volition.
some of the questions, and I know you mentioned you. I don't want to say glossed over, but you did mention it. You said that you guys had designed a new engine, or you have a new engine in place for this game. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Not really.
Okay. There you have it, folks.
Exclusive.
The engines that ran 3 and 4, they you know, it was built for last generation. This is so, like, you know, with PS4, with Xbox One, with the new generation of video cards and stuff coming out. It was a decision was made, I think, actually probably like 6 months before I got hired. I think this is when they started. I'm probably totally wrong on that. Sorry, everyone. But yeah, it was, you know, engines age. And so you have to make the decision of like, okay, do we bring this engine up to speed? We put the resources in it, or do we start fresh? Blish made the decision to start fresh and make something that took advantage of modern sensibilities, modern architecture, modern random programmer words.
Yeah, I just want to go back into the game itself. You said 12 characters. You talk a little bit more about the character development process used by you and the rest of the team of Revolution.
We initially, I mean, all the agents started out as post-it notes. They were a group of people from different disciplines getting into a room and just brainstorming ideas. And it's funny to see how some of those early ideas ended up making their way into Agents of Mayhem. Like there's the head of R&D, Gremlin, began as an agent idea for someone named Kaboom, who was just this kind of... spry, chipper, like just love blowing stuff up, character. And she didn't end up shaking out for the playable agents. But when it came time to make the base agents, it was like, you know, this is just a fun character. This is a character that I think we want to explore more. We tried a bunch of different starting points. You know, like we would have 1 week or one session where we would just be like, okay, what's the big dream we're fulfilling here, right? And others where it's like, you know, find a piece of art that inspires you, or find an archetype or some kind of classic character you want to base someone on. We've heard a bunch of different things to inspire. You know, we would ask the concept artist, just create a character. Just create a character. Just draw a character you think is interesting and we'll use that as a starting point. We end up with this huge list and some natural favorites shook out of it. I think Daisy was an early favorite. I think she may have been in either the first round of concepting or the second, and we had a lot of rounds of concepting. But she began as a character named Bombshell. And yeah, she just shook out as a favorite, the big brash derby girl. Hardtack was a writer on the project at the time. Tony Bedard had found some concept art on a directory, on the network, and he was like, "Oh man, this character!" And he just kind of like like all of a sudden this character just kind of came out fully formed, even the name Ishmael Funderburk. And then once those started to get refined, that's to better define them.
Do you have a favorite character that didn't make the cut?
Oh. So sometimes, you know, sometimes we get a little loopy and, you know, cause we'd be like, look, we've come up with like 100 characters here. Right. And sometimes we'd go completely off the wall. And two that I loved, one was called Grimdark, who was just the grimmest, darkest character. He had like the most tragic backstory in the world, you know? And it was just totally like, he had like, his character was just all in black all the time, cause it was just his soul. And then, and then there's a guy on the team, Jeff Touchstone, who came up with Agent Bear, who's a bear. And that was it. He's a bear. And he wrote, an entire bio on him. It was like, he's a berserker. He fights with his bare arms. And it was just like a slew of like...
The attacks are unbearable.
Oh my, yeah, right? And it was like, this is genius. This is absolutely genius. How do we put this character in the game? Turns out you don't. But yeah, as far as like more serious concepts, I'd say probably, Kaboom, like the original, I think it would be fun to have someone who's, we had a couple of characters who the basic, most like distilled version of their shtick was they love blowing stuff up, you know? Mm-hmm. And actually one of them became Gremlin and the other one became Claymore, who's another base agent. I think that's one of the things that like everyone loved them so much. We wanted them to survive in some way.
Force them to come through.
Right. It's like, you know, cause like, well, we need someone who's the head of the armory who makes the weapons. And we need someone who's the head of R&D who makes the gadgets. And so it's like, well, you know, we could just completely come up with brand new characters, but you know, I think most of them, except for Friday, who was added quite late in development, and she's like the main base agent. I think they all came from old agent ideas that just kind of never worked as agents, but we still liked them as characters.
Got a question here from one of our mods, Arctic Warlocks. He caught, you know, when Danny and I were playing over the weekend, he caught some of the early missions, and there's one area where there's a loudspeaker in the plaza with a loop about facts on Uranus, however you want to pronounce it. How much research goes into the development of not only the story, but ancillary commentary as well?
Well, you know, it was a writer on the team, Jason Scott, who is kind of obsessed with Uranus, and he wanted to dig deep in Uranus facts and kind of make sure, like, you know, he wanted to get Uranus out there in front of everyone because he just loves that planet so much. You end up down some really weird deep dives sometimes when you're writing, because you want to build this. You want to build not only the stuff that's in front of the player, right, like the Uranus exhibit, but also you want backstory, right? Because you want to build those conversations, that banter, that kind of that hints at this other life, this depth to the universe. And so that's where like Red Card's love of butterfly princesses came from. I have an unabashed love for Monster High. We talked about this before going live a little bit. I absolutely love Monster High. And people, you know, the bronies, right? The adult fans of My Little Pony Friendship is Magic. That kind of stuff inspired Red Card, and that inspired this whole in-universe show called Butterfly Princesses. And we ended up coming up with characters, episode titles, episode summaries. You know, some of that stuff is just like real deep dives of things that are completely of our imagination. And others are like, you know, I'm going to stay at the office 4 hours late because I just fell down a Wikipedia hole because we decided like this character likes this kind of music. And now all of a sudden, like it's in my entire YouTube history is this, or, you know, music from this genre.
Let me ask you this, because I know you were involved with the story and everything, but were you involved with the also with the lyrics of some of the songs in the game too?
Only barely. I think I came up with the titles.
Okay.
But there's a guy on staff, Larry Gates. He is the true musical genius behind some of the original songs in there. I think I wrote the only lyrics I wrote the bridge to spoken word bridge to the August Gaunt tearjerker weeps for my peeps. Okay. But you know, it's as a writer and video games, and I assume this is the same for like television and movies, like you come up with an idea and it's like all it is words on a page, right? Or all it is like something that made someone laugh, and you know that it's going to require someone else to visualize this character, someone else to record this dialogue, or someone else to write this song. And so some of the songs came up, and like, you know, there are two musical characters in the game. You know, I felt in one of them, I kind of don't want to say too much because it's kind of a surprise character, but that was just like a joke that happened in a meeting. Was like, hey, what if this? And then I riffed on that for a whole thing, and then I like went back immediately to all this stuff about the character. And one of them was like, here's the album and here are the song titles. And I believe when it was like when that character got moved to the fore of like, you know, we're going to do some things with her. I think Larry just picked the title. He may have asked. I don't know. I don't remember. But he delivered the song. And then for August Gaunt, our pop star, our bad guy pop star. Larry's a musician in his own right, a great lyricist. And that was the case. And as I told him, like, yeah, the writing team could write these lyrics, but why would we? We have a great lyricist and a musician, you know, like, so as long as Larry was okay taking this on, then we were good with it. And man, the stuff he delivered, even the rough cut stuff, when it was like his vocals and kind of just like the basic melodies in that. Oh man, it was so good. Those songs, people started to hate because they just be on loop. You're working on a mission and the mission's built around a song, and people are like, if I hear this song one more time, man, I'm on snap. I'm like, I know. You're going to hear it one more time, though, so.
I do love when games, when there's, like, challenges, unlockables, where you get, like, bloopers or maybe some concept designs. I just love that. Like, just recently, you know, Night Trap just came out, the 25th anniversary, right? A lot of people are not a fan of that game, but to me, I feel like, dude, it's like part of history, you know, like I just loved getting all that stuff, you know, so it would have been cool if you guys would have added that, you know, in the game, because I know you have like crazy stories. So, and a lot of bloopers and a lot of concepts, so that would have been awesome. I think, thankfully, we did
Mike Watson, our community developer, and Josh Stinson, our audio guy, our video guy, they were doing streams leading up to the release, and they would focus on different things. Like every Thursday they'd do a live stream from the office, and they would focus on a different character. And so a lot of the stuff got shown then, and I'm glad, because it's kind of a, you know, I mean, you guys have been doing podcasts since 1842 and, you use the Babbage engine. You would record on the Victrola. I know you guys have been through this, you know, but just like, I'm sure you guys have tons and tons of stories of like things that went wrong, you know, and just the normal stuff that you know is going to go wrong, like before every single show, right? And video games are a lot like that, like early concept art that is just way off the mark, you know. Like we had to recast some characters for various reasons, and so there's a lot of how the sausage is made that happens in video games, and I love showing that stuff because before I worked in video games, you know, like video games just happened. There was like a clamshell opened up and a fully formed video game walked out. The amount of iteration and compromise and late in the development process, mad genius that happens to get this stuff, I had no insight into. So I love sharing that. I like showing the human side of game development, that like, well, here's a dumb idea we had, and I don't know why we thought that, you know, and just put it out there. And like, here's a real dumb thing that happened. You guys have to see this. It's hilarious. I love showing that stuff.
So you said 4 years in development was the game. How much has the game evolved from the beginning to, you know, what essentially came out today? Like, was there a lot of flux in between? Was there a massive shift midstream? Is there anything that you could tell us about that?
Yeah. A lot. And working on new engine, new tool set, not knowing what is the standard going to be in 2017. And that's kind of the thing with game development. You're making decisions on a game 2-3 years, whatever, before it hits shelves. You don't know what other people are working on. You don't know what that feels going to be like, you know? And then, you know, there are things that happen, like I'm going to be real, man. Like when the Overwatch got announced, I'm like, well, there it is. Because people are like, oh, this character is like this character in Overwatch. And I'm like, well, yeah, you know, but like, it's not like, you know, it's like these are things that were developed separately. They just kind of all got developed at the same time. You look at like Paragon, Battleborn, and Overwatch, right? They all kind of got lumped in together.
Right.
And it's like, well, this happens. You know, if you look at like Hollywood, you know, I think a classic example from the 90s would be like Wyatt Earp and Tombstone both got developed. You know, it's like, it's that kind of stuff. You don't know what's happening. And then you don't know what you're walking into. You know, you're developing a thing. You don't know. You have no idea like what it's going to be like when you put it out there. And so you're always adjusting what you're doing and looking at like what your strengths are and where the project is trending. You know, you're making decisions that are calculated risks, right? Like, we're not going to have co-op. That was a calculated risk. Right. There were a lot of, throughout the development of this game, like you had things like the Nemesis system come online, which was like this is awesome. You know, like Shadow of Mordor, like that was amazing. And you had, you know, so you're like, what kind of impact is that going to have on our competition? You also have like the advent of procedurality in AAA games, right? And it's like, well, what is that going to be like? Are we going to be on shelves with fully procedural games? Like, we should be doing some research into procedural, but how much of our game should be procedural versus handcrafted? Because we're kind of known, you know, the Saints Row games especially are known for their handcrafted moments. The bank vault mission in Saints Row the Third, climbing up the nuke while Aerosmith plays in Saints Row 4. And these are all handcrafted things. These aren't things you could do procedurally, right? So you're always looking. And even like, are we going to have one character and then like a bunch of support agents? Or are we going to have where you can play any character? And then like the decision to be like, you can field a squad of three became a decision that we made. But you have to explore all these different options because you have to do some level of due process with all this stuff to vet it and kind of feel out what is going to be the best decision, not only for the end product, but, you know, for your budget, for your time frame. So it went through a lot of changes, and once it kind of settles in, you know, you're able to really move forward and be like, all right, we know now what this is. Then we're going to push forward and make this the best we can. And it's one of the reasons that, you know, the sequels to games, you know, like you look at like Assassin's Creed, right? Like, I have no insight at all into Assassin's Creed's development, but I know that I played Assassin's Creed 1. I enjoyed it. I called it like the best Pac-Man game in 30 years, you know? And once Ubi knew what Assassin's Creed was, they could build on it, right? And so obviously Assassin's Creed 2 came out. I picked it up and I'm like, oh, holy crap. This is everything I loved about Assassin's Creed, plus a bunch of other cool stuff, because a lot of the hard work had been done for them as far as like that fundament, building the very basics of what an Assassin's Creed game is. And I'm sure throughout however many years of Creed, they went through a lot of different ideas as far as what that game was. And it was similar with Agents of Mayhem, you know, but now there's a foundation. We know what it is now. We have some, the big decisions have been made. And so now it becomes a matter of like, you know, if this were to move forward, right? Not saying there is going to be one, but if we were to make an Agents of Mayhem 2, right, it would, the questions would be less about what is this game and more how do we build on this game.
Now, my question about the whole process of maybe getting the voice actors to be involved with this, because I know probably when you wrote the story for this, right, you probably had like a vision. Okay, this character has to sound like this. Were you involved in getting the voice cast for this project or no? Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Because I believe one of the characters, he is the voice actor that worked on Kratos, right? The lead voice actor for that game on God of War.
Yes. Yeah, he's our Hardtack. Hardtack was a really hard one to cast.
Hmm. Really?
Okay, yeah. Interesting.
It surprised me, the ones that were hard. It was that, like, a loud guy who's not just a loud guy, you know, who can emote, who is just like, this is a guy you just want to hang out with, but is also like scary, you know, because he needs to be. He needs to be able to put on that facade, and because he's a big guy, wanted to be an intimidating guy, and that was just surprisingly hard to cast. And then we had tried some that just didn't work out for different reasons, and then, you know, it came down to like, in the writer's room, it was just like, come on, TC Carson, right? Like let's just commit to that man, because the guy's got a voice, but also he can project, and also, you know, he could be a guy that is just throws his arm around your shoulder and you guys are having beers and laughing, right? And then there are some, like British accents. Turns out everyone in Los Angeles can do a British accent, so that was hard to cast. And in both ways of like, here are 100 auditions, and both like, well, there are a lot that are really good, you know. But it was a lot of fun, because you have to know when you're casting, you have to know kind of what you're looking for. You don't want to just throw up a dartboard and be like, all right, give me whatever. And so different studios, different casting agencies, they require different things. And a lot of times it's like, you know, give me some pop culture reference, give me a famous actor, give me a character in a show, something, right? Give me some sample lines. Mm-hmm. And so you have to have level, but every good relationship, I think, between the writing team and the voice actor, the character, I've said this other places, so fans of mine will have heard this before. It's like the character really is the bridge. It exists on the bridge between the writer and the voice actor when it comes to the performance, the vocal performance. Because like from my perspective, we are successful when the voice actor owns the character as much, if not more than we do. Mm-hmm. And you'll get that. You'll get that because you will be listening to the auditions that come in, and maybe you'll hear something that you hadn't considered before, right? And even if I think this happened with Misty Lee, the voice actor for Daisy, was that Misty hit exactly what Daisy was in my head immediately. And I was like, this is it. This is Daisy, no doubt. Even in that case of like, it was like Misty reaching into my brain and pulling this character out. Once we had lines of Misty talking as Daisy started to change on the writing side, because now she was being informed by Misty's performance. Mm-hmm. And that's always like when the magic happens. And we had this with Larissa Gallagher, who is the voice of Friday. Now, Friday's a character, you hear her all the time. She's the head of missions, essentially. She's a head of logistics and teleportation operations. You know, so you're going to hear this voice all the time. So it's got to be really pleasant. Yeah, but also has to, you know, we also have to have some fun with this character. And that was Friday is a fun character because she's so straight laced externally, even though like internally, like, you know, her secret self is often frustrated, gets fed up with the agents being agents instead of just doing what she asks. And that became something that was really informed by Larissa's performance, who was able to give us a pleasant, posh British accent. And then we were able to kind of push the boundaries of that, of like, you know, what would it be if Friday just didn't care, right? If Friday just hit her limit. Like, what would that sound like? So write some lines and see what Larissa does with it. Yeah, the cast of this game, I just adore them to the very depths of my heart and soul, because they're able to deliver such great characters. And oh man, yeah, that's probably one of my favorite parts of writing for video games is casting and then seeing these characters come alive and then just meeting the actors, and just, it's just a love fest.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, it's always the background stories that sometimes almost end up having a life of their own. It's hard to become bigger than the game or the IP or the title, but I think that is where the true story or meat of the games a lot of times occurs, is behind the scenes, where it's like you said, you know, getting to meet the voice actors that bring the characters that came from up here and onto paper or onto screen to life. And then you're actually like, that's what I wanted, you know. So,
you know why I think that's important too, to talk about that, is because maybe a fan of the series or of the new IP, new game, the consumers are gonna feel like, man, I feel like I'm part of this too, because, you know, listening to all these behind the scenes, I think it's important in our industry for people to know about that, you know.
Absolutely.
That's agreed. Cool. And I think you know, the voice talent's often overlooked in general, in games and in movies, anywhere, like in the cartoons and stuff like that. Voice acting is a very separate discipline. It's very different than on-screen acting, you know, even though there are people who can do both. And so, but they don't really get seen, right? They're just their voice. And like I love putting them forward, because they're such incredible people. And they always have great stories about, like, working on other games and stuff. Yeah, they're always that glimpse into other processes of, like, oh, you worked in that game? What was that like? And then you hear stories, you're like, oh, all right. Yeah, man, I love it.
Very cool. Right. Pete, anything else, Pete?
No, I think we're going to wrap it up. Jason, if you could please let our listeners and viewers know they have more information, where can they go, you know, to find out where, you know, if they've on Twitter, social media, give it to me.
AOMthegame.com and AOMthegame across whatever social media you like. Twitter, Instagram, probably Tumblr. I don't know. Everything. Now, right now, Mike Watson is like, Jason, you fool. What are you doing? Yeah, AOMthegame is what you're looking for.
Okay. And it's out right now as we're recording, right?
Out in Europe on Friday, the 18th of August. But out in North America and I believe Asia and that as of Tuesday.
Excellent. Well, Jason, thank you very much for taking the time out of your busy schedule. Kudos. Definitely. From at least me. And I know Danny's been enjoying it. Kudos on the game, because it's a boatload of fun. And
yes,
can't wait to
see. And hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't wait to see what else Volition has in store in the future. Hopefully there's more Agents of Mayhem and or Saints Row particular co-op.
Eat some more Volition special sauce.
Good.
Can't wait to talk to you guys again in hopefully less than 4 years.
Hopefully. Jason, yeah, thank you once again.
Thanks a lot, man.
All right. Yeah. Danny, you want to talk us out?
Yeah. So head over to gamertagradio.com or play.it/gamertag. Listen to our past episodes. You also can find us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast directories. Just go over there and make sure to share with your friends. Also, you can watch us on Twitch. Go to twitch.tv/gamertagradio. You could go over there and also join our Discord channel, right, Pete? Yep. Discord channel is absolutely on fire.
Yeah, discord.gg/GTR. Join us for fun, hilarity. The dank memes are always dank there. And then, you know, get an opportunity to play with us. I mean, we love playing video games, and it's more fun to play with our community members. Yeah.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
Head over to iTunes. There's only 7 days left. the release of the documentary that we're in, The Messengers, a podcast documentary, is coming out in 7 days. So you can buy it now for only $5.99. Go over there and support and watch the behind-the-scenes story about GTR. It's pretty hilarious. And that's about it, guys. Thanks for all the support. And Jason, once again, thanks a lot, man.
Thank you guys so much.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.